This is the Seahawkers Podcast, episode 309. I'm Brandon Schultz of the Military Seahawkers, and joining me, my good buddy and Montana Seahawker, Adam Emmert.
Brandon, I hope you spent your bye week much like the Seahawks and I did, which is undefeated.
Did
you remain undefeated over the bye week?
I don't remember getting defeated by anything, so I must be...
You look undefeated to me.
Still undefeated.
Yeah. At worst, you may have had a tie in there, I think.
Maybe when it comes to battles with young kids in math, I may have fought to a tie in some of those situations.
There you go. Still not a loss. You didn't take the L. So that's good.
That is good. And yes, the Seahawks are still 5-0, and each team in the NFC West now has two or more losses. So thanks to the 49ers for beating the Rams on Sunday Night Football. That helped in the standings, although it felt kind of gross. Like, watching that game, and it's just a weird experience because the sports hate for those two teams is so high that something good happens to where you are looking forward to the potential outcome that thing would lead toward, but yet you can't cheer because it feels gross.
Yeah, I felt like every time either team had the ball, I was rooting for failure. Even though I wanted the stupid Rams to win that game, but it was impossible. It was impossible to root for them.
Yeah.
And or the Niners, right? That's where I was rooting for. Sorry. See, that's how confused
I was. It's so confusing.
Yeah. It confuses me on the inside. I don't like it. But no, every time the Niners had the ball, I was like, Jimmy's going to choke here. Jimmy's going to do something stupid.
Catfish!
Jimmy. Like, and I couldn't help it, man.
Yeah, it's just a weird experience. And I guess we're fortunate now that all those teams have two or more losses in the loss column. But coming up here on Sunday against the Arizona Cardinals, the Seahawks get their first chance to take down a division opponent. And it's a place where they've been able to take down the Cardinals. What is it now? 6 out of 8 times with one tie and one loss being Russell Wilson's first game of his NFL career.
Right, which he took him down on the last drive of the game, and he almost won it.
If it weren't for Sidney Braylon Rice. Freaking Edwards dropping the game-winning touchdown.
Yeah, yeah. So Russ is locked in there, no doubt. Now, if we can just get out of that stadium with everybody healthy, that's really all I'm looking for, is just to get away from that, Indian burial ground that's underneath that stadium that is cursed.
They did it last year. That streak is over, and there's never going to be another serious injury there again.
All right, perfect. Oh, well, now I feel a lot better about this game because we are definitely beating the freaking Cardinals.
Well, we can get more into that coming up. We could talk a little news before we get started. Michael Kendricks coming back to the Seahawks, signed to the practice squad.
Okay. So him and Snacks just hanging out.
Just hanging out on the practice squad together.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's cool for them, I guess.
It's interesting you mentioned Snacks because he was in a couple teams. Because he is on the practice squad, teams are allowed to approach them and potentially sign the players off of the practice squad. And he said, no, I'm good. So that's cool.
Hey, man, do you think Snacks is doing the backup QB thing where he's just like, man, holding this clipboard, sweet. I keep getting them checks. I don't have to get hit.
Yeah, except I think we might need him coming up here in at least through this stretch of NFC West teams, right? Because we're now getting into the meat of the Seahawks schedule where they're taking on the Cardinals twice, the 49ers, the Rams, and all three of those teams are more effective when they're running the football and having Snacks in the middle to help, stop those runs up the middle would be huge.
Look, we need him for every game going forward with the defense the way that it is. There's no doubt about it. I mean, is he a guy who can play a little bit? If the answer is yes, then we need him. It might be the same for Michael Kendricks, who apparently will never go to trial for any of his things.
No. He will be, 45 years old and maybe still 45. Bouncing around from roster to roster.
I think 45 is optimistic, man. He's probably going to be more like 96 when they finally get around to, doing the Michael Kendricks trial.
Well, speaking of guys who could help this team a little bit, Yannick Ngakoue, who Seahawks fans were, maybe considering as a potential pass rusher in the offseason, a trade from Jacksonville to get him up to Seattle. He ends up getting traded to the Minnesota Vikings. Well, now with the Vikings not really in competition in that NFC North, the Vikings decide to get rid of him, send him to the Baltimore Ravens, Adam, for a third round pick and a conditional fifth rounder.
I did not see that. Wow, that was a short stint for Ngakoue there.
Six games.
Wow. Huh. So for a third and a conditional sixth, is that what you said?
Conditional fifth.
Well, considering the absolute lack of production that he gave him over the course of those few games, I mean,
he had four sacks, I think, in those six games.
Yeah. I mean,
that's not a one game four sack performance like you get from Chandler Jones out of the Cardinals.
Sure, sure. So basically, he has four more sacks than Clowney on the year. Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, initially, I think if you would have told Seahawks fans, because, okay, a third rounder from the Vikings, that's still going to be a pretty low third round pick. And, well, for one, the Seahawks don't have a third round pick because they sent it to the Jets for Jamal Adams along with the two first round picks. So the Seahawks would have had to send a second round pick. They probably get out of sending a conditional fifth rounder, but a second round pick for 10 games of the season for Yannick Ngakoue. I know it sounds good because the Seahawks need that position, but then you get to the draft and you are waiting around until the fourth round to actually make a selection.
Yeah, but then again, in this next draft here, without really much college football being played, how much do you know about these guys coming out? I mean, I think these draft picks for the upcoming draft are probably some of the more worthless draft picks that you could have, right? Maybe not worthless is the right word. Maybe more of a crapshoot than even normal.
I think you would want to compile more draft picks. But then again, if you send a second round pick, you can't be trading out of that second round pick to get more draft picks.
What? Or you go the complete opposite way. You get rid of the draft picks for known quantities.
Sure. And if it were a situation where you're signing Ngakoue long term, then maybe it makes it worthwhile. But yeah, it's I've seen some feelings of despair just by the fact that now the Ravens have been able to trade for Marcus Peters, Calais Campbell, and now Yannick Ngakoue for 2/5 and a third round pick.
Yeah, that's some shrewd stuff. There's no doubt about it. I mean, who is the GM there now? The guy who took over for Ozzie?
Yeah, that guy.
That guy. Well, he learned under Ozzie, and you can tell because he's a sharp cookie. No doubt about it.
There's other moves to be made out there. I know up on field goals, Ryan Kerrigan of the Washington football team, one of those suggestions because he's at the end of a contract year. Melvin Ingram at the end of his contract year with the Chargers. A couple potential guys, maybe.
Yeah, there's always possibilities out there. And let's all remember that every time that John does pull off one of these trades, it's one we didn't see coming. So the idea that we're going to sit here and, you know, really hone in on a guy that we think is going to be who he pulls the trigger for, I don't know that that's going to happen.
And really signing even Antonio Brown to the offense, like I know the joke is made quite often, like, can Antonio Brown rush the passer? No, he can't. And no, I don't even think we need him as wide receiver four on this team.
No, absolutely not. No, I want no part of Antonio Brown. No. The offense is not broken, okay? We don't need to bring in some freaking head case. Well, maybe he's got it all together. Sure.
Maybe.
Yep. Yeah, that usually trends back into the right direction for guys. Like when they start descending into madness. Yeah, I don't ever really see them, like, you know, pulling out of that on the regular, especially for receivers. That usually goes one direction to Badsville. And that's where Antonio Brown is. Like, no.
And once they do start to get it together in terms of their mentality and approach is, you know, could I be a compliment as far instead of being the star? That's usually when their performance has declined to the point to where they aren't that impact type player. Go back to Terrell Owens, where it seemed like, OK, he's kind of figured things out. And here he is on the Seahawks. You're trying to make the roster in preseason. And then he just wasn't good enough to make the roster.
Yeah. Well, and then there's a lot of that there. But you know, another example of that would be the Ravens yet again. I mean, they're going to probably bring in Dez Bryant, it sounds like.
It is, yeah.
Who couldn't get separation 3 years ago and is now, 46 years old? Like, I don't really see that.
Michael Irvin's not available at this point to come back.
Jeez Louise. Yeah, not looking good. No, I don't have any desire to see Antonio Brown. I mean, let's see what happens when Josh Gordon gets in the building, you know, Dorsett's foot heals up, whatever it is. It's they're fine at receiver.
Yeah.
So I just don't see the need for it, especially when you could go out and spend a couple bucks on defense possibly still. And hey, maybe the big surprise move from John Schneider and Pete Carroll is going to be a whole lot of nothing. Maybe they think that getting Jamal Adams back from injury, getting Jordan Brooks back from injury, getting Taylor back from injury. We haven't seen a second of him, right? And we haven't heard much about his recovery.
Yeah.
I mean, he was the big draftee to rush the passer. Maybe they kind of believe that with all that, they're going to have enough to generate just enough pressure and just enough turnovers to give the ball back to Russ and win by a score. I mean, that's got to be the mentality. Is not so much they're going to stop him on any given drive. It's more just, can we make three big plays a game?
How about this, Adam? A lot of people picking up on the fact that the Seahawks roster, it now lists 7th round draft pick Stephon Sullivan, where remember there was some question about whether he'd be tight end, whether he'd be wide receiver. Mm-hmm. They list him at wide receiver when he joins the team. Well, now he's on the practice squad and he has a position change on the Seahawks official roster, now listed as tight end / defensive end.
Interesting. Okay. Well, he's one of those freaky athletes. Who knows, man? Could be a developmental guy. The Seahawks do pull that off now and then with those late round draft picks. I mean, we saw them try to do it from defense to offense for years there, right? With offensive linemen with one success. Maybe they'll have better luck going this direction. I don't know.
Well, it would have been hard to see Sullivan making it onto the roster as a wide receiver at this point, and even really as a tight end with, you know, the depth that they have there. So maybe this is his one route that he has some skill at in some way. And Will Dissly was a guy that made the transition from defensive end to tight end while he was at Washington. So,
right.
Yeah, I guess, maybe it's not so crazy, but maybe it's crazy enough to work.
Hey, man, I'll take anything that is outside the box when it comes to fixing the pass rush right now, man. I'll take crazy all day on that level, just not at wide receiver. I'd love to see Pete Carroll go total mad scientist and like cook up something that nobody's really ever seen before. And they're just like, wow, who knew you could do that? Like take a tight end and turn him into a DN. And all of a sudden, 10 years from now, we're talking about how everybody is looking at basketball players to be defensive ends instead right. of tight ends.
You never know. You just never know at this
point. I'm just saying it might happen. I'd put money on it. It's probably a high percentage chance that this is going to be a home run.
I don't know who I would put money on when it comes to ranking the NFC West, especially behind the Seahawks, because looking at the, you know,
well, why would you spend any time ranking it? If you're not first, Brandon,
you're last.
There you go. So if the Seahawks are in first and the Rams, Cardinals, and Niners are all catfishing last.
Well, I'm curious, though, of who we have to worry about, I guess, is the big concern. Mm-hmm. And maybe the answer is none of them. But the Rams, I was starting to think that they might be the next best team. But then they went and lost to the San Francisco 49ers. Their 4 wins are over NFC East teams still.
Right.
They've lost to the Bills and they've lost to the Niners.
Right.
So trying to rank them, you'd almost put them at the back end just based on their strength of victories, right? Just being over NFC East teams. Because you look at the 49ers, they only have 3 wins. 2 of those wins are over the Jets and the Giants. Not real strong teams.
Nope.
But they beat the Rams in their latest game. So maybe they're back, Adam, as San Francisco 49ers fans are saying to themselves after that win against Los Angeles.
Yeah, okay. They still lost a bunch of dudes on defense to injury. That's not going away. And as far as who the second best team is in the NFC West, I would probably still go with the Rams at this point, only because Aaron Donald in that defense. That defense is a formidable unit. And they always do terrorize us. And so out of all of them, that's probably the one that I fear the most. With Joey Bosa going out, I don't fear that Niners defense the way that I used to, you know, especially with, you know, Buckner being gone and the corner play has been subpar. Somehow they put it together against the Rams. But again, I don't think that was all that difficult once you figured out they just run crossers and boots. I think even Robert Saleh can figure that one out, right? Look, I just don't fear that Niners defense, and I just give Garoppolo any kind of, you know, difficult situation, and he's going to screw up. That's just who he is. And they don't trust him, and they don't have as many running backs as they used to. The Niners just don't scare me. The Rams, to me, probably just, again, because of Aaron Donald and company, they can just wreck Russell Wilson's day. He does it all the time.
Or is it now the Cardinals, who their four wins, two of them over NFC East teams, Dallas, Washington. They beat the Jets as well. And they beat the 49ers in the opening game of the season for them. So who also beat the Rams. So if you're ranking it that way, maybe the Cardinals are the second best team in the NFC West right now.
Yeah, I've watched a fair amount of Cardinals so far this year. And, you know, I thought the defense was better than I originally had estimated. And, you know, after watching it, I kind of take that back. I mean, they are a very mediocre defense. I don't see a lot of specialness there. Now, as far as the offense goes, I mean, teams have kind of figured it out. You do the muddle rush, right? Like I watched a couple teams do this with Kyler, and let's not get it twisted. The Cowboys didn't do any of this because they have terrible, terrible coaches.
Right.
But you kind of do the muddle rush with Kyler. You try to keep his scrambling to a minimum, and you just squat on the underneath stuff, and he might hit one deep one to D-Hop all game, and then that's it. The rest of it is going to be 10-yard hitches, 8-yard slants, bubble screen. It's as predictable as a day as long. Get your hands up, and you basically stopped the Cardinals' offense, and you said, well, do we need snacks to slow down some of these NFC West running teams? Because they're all better when they're able to establish a run. The Cardinals have a willful streak in them to just not have the running game happen at all. They don't care about it. Cliff Kingsbury could care less about the freaking running game.
Well, against the Cowboys, they used it pretty effectively. 164 yards for Kenyon Drake on 20 carries. Murray had 10 rushes for 74 yards. You know, some of that.
Who's the leading rusher on that team?
It's Kenyon Drake.
Oh, that must be after this last week.
Yeah. Because before, okay. I think it was Kyler Murray.
There we go.
Yeah.
So he had his one aberration game that he has every year. Remember, there's always that one Kenyon Drake game a year, whether it was a Dolphin or a Cardinal, where you're like, wow, Kenyon Drake. Like, I forgot he was awesome. And then he goes back to just being a dude.
Yeah, it was by far his biggest performance against Washington. He had 20 rushes for 186 yards. So he doubled up his yards per attempt against the Cowboys. And maybe that just has something to say about that Cowboys defense. And man, they are struggling. But the Cardinals defense able to turn over Zeke quite a bit. One of the things that I talked to Ed Smith of he does radio down there for the Arizona Cardinals. He played for the Falcons.
They must pay him a butt ton to do that. I can't imagine anybody doing that willingly.
You know what? It's probably just where he chose to retire was in Arizona. And it's like, hey, I could talk football and live in Arizona and live out my retirement. I haven't heard that directly from him, but that seems right.
But he has to talk about Cardinals football.
Yeah. And I heard him show a little bit of worry over the fact that he was picking the Seahawks. I don't know what Cardinals fans are giving him a hard time about, you know, actually picking the Seahawks to win in a building where they've always won historically. That seems weird. And he saw this as a potential get right game for Seattle in their running game and to really take advantage of that Cardinals defense. Because other than turning over Zeke, really, they haven't faced a team that can run the ball effectively. And so that's what we might see from the Seahawks team against Arizona this week.
Yeah, maybe. It's hard to know
if this is this shift that we've seen is if they're all day, in.
Every day, every Sunday, because I feel like it is. Man, I was listening to Russell Wilson on Bill Simmons' podcast from this last week. I don't see this team refocusing on the run anytime soon. Now, maybe they do a little bit better job of sprinkling it in, because when Chris Carson has run the ball, he's been very effective. And I'd like to see a little bit more of it, because I do think it would help balance out time of possession, which is going to be a huge deal. And that's another thing about this Cardinals team when we're looking at facing them. The one thing that does kind of worry me a little bit, they are such a dink and dunk passing team that they could sit on the ball a lot like the Vikings did, you know, and just dominate time of possession that way. Keep the ball out of Russ's hands because that's the only way you're stopping him right now.
Yeah, and that might be the way that the Seahawks defense wants to play it, too. Keep them everything in front of them, keeping it short.
You think?
That's what we've seen. They will allow that. So, you know, how do they approach Kyler Murray? Do they do something similar to what Carolina did? And you know, I could see them as a defense sending three guys in the pass rush. Ken Norton Jr. hasn't been shy about only rushing three players, but putting a guy like Shaquem Griffin on the field along with those four guys up front, just kind of dropping him back and being that spy on Kyler Murray. So as you rush three, trying to keep him contained in the pocket, and then having Shaquem be the guy or Bobby be the guy to kind of clean up that middle when he tries to move up into the pocket.
Yeah, well, the good news here is that the pass rush is so terrible that when it is implemented, if you just run your normal scheme, it looks like that muddle rush. Like you're not trying to actually get pressure.
Yeah.
You're just kind of staying in your gaps. That's actually what has worked well against Kyler Murray. And look, they don't even have to make any schematic adjustments here. Just try real hard to get at the quarterback, fail, but just stay in front of him. And like you say, have that one spy. I'd like to see Jamal Adams back out on the field. I think that's a huge part of eliminating, you know, some of the run game and things like that that Kyler Murray brings.
I'd like to see Jamal back out there. I'd like to see Quentin Dunbar back out there because I think, you know, this might set up well for him being that guy to, you know, that doesn't play in press. But if he can drop back and kind of have his eyes on Kyler and get in front of a few of those throws to DeAndre Hopkins, I could see that working out well, too.
Yeah. I mean, the other thing the Seahawks need to do is put seven guys on DeAndre Hopkins because it's pretty much the only dude he throws to anymore.
Yeah, which is weird when you have Larry Fitzgerald on the team. Kirk had that 80-yard touchdown reception last week.
I get that. I mean, I know the Cardinals have had a explosive play here and there, but it's just not what their offense is, man.
No, it's throwing it to DeAndre Hopkins, who has 600 receiving yards on the season. He's averaging 100 yards per game.
And 14 catches a game. They're all like 6-yard outs.
Oh, I know. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's crazy. And contrast that with DK Metcalf, who's right behind DeAndre Hopkins in terms of yards and yards per game. Metcalf has 22 yards per reception on average.
Right. Yeah, it's a vastly different attack. There's no doubt about it. So, yes, it will be an interesting game. Yes, it will be another tight game because it's a freaking division game. And we always end up playing those close. Well, we play every game close, too, on top of that. So, I mean, yeah. It's not like I'm being some bold predictor here, or, you know, some provocateur. But I don't see anybody on that Cardinals defense in the back end that Russell Wilson can't tear up. Like Patrick Peterson is far past his prime. Buda Baker is at a point. I mean, he's still a young player though. And I think that's a guy Russell Wilson can manipulate all day with his eyes and with his calls at the line of scrimmage, things like that. It's easy enough to neutralize him. And you know, I mean, that Chandler Jones guy that everybody thinks is good. I mean,
he's hurt. He's out for the season.
Oh, is he?
Yeah.
Oh, thank God. That's how much I paid attention to Chandler Jones.
Yeah, and, he has torn biceps. He just had surgery on it. So he's out for the season.
When did that happen?
I think it was the week prior.
Oh, okay.
I was watching a little Mark Schofield breaking down one of the things the Cardinals like to do on third and long. They've sent out six linebackers onto the field with five defensive backs, no defensive linemen, and they'll rush maybe three or four linebackers and drop a couple into coverage and attack teams that way on those third and long plays. Kind of interesting.
Has it been effective?
It has been effective, but nobody has tried running the ball on third and long, which I wonder. I could see the Seahawks actually doing that and trying it and maybe having success.
The only thing that scares me about that is Pete might actually see that when he's doing film study this week. And that's like a wet dream for Pete.
The linebackers, put them all on the field.
Put them all on the field at once. Why do you think Kendricks just got brought back?
Well,
he saw that on tape and he was like, dudes, We can throw all the linebackers on the field at once. Who cares about defensive linemen? We don't need them.
Yeah. Cardinals tend to have bigger linebackers, though.
Yeah, that helps.
So I think they have more of the ability to pull that off than the Seahawks might.
Maybe.
The one thing about this Cardinals game, though, this is the first time they'll be tested with that type of offense, with the speed to the edges. That's the bummer thing about this, is that I feel like the defense in the offseason was built around stopping teams like this, the Rams, the 49ers with the acquisition of Jamal Adams, the drafting of Jordan Brooks. Mm-hmm. And now with Brooks and Adams hurt, I don't even know if we're going to get to see how that will play out against the Cardinals.
Right. I mean, and you literally named the two most important additions to the defense to try to address that problem of being ran on to the outside. And I don't know. I haven't seen anything about either of these two dudes, whether or not we expect to see them here this upcoming week.
I think there is some hope that maybe Jordan Brooks could be back. He was limited in practice on Wednesday. We won't see Thursday's injury report until a little bit later. Jamal Adams sat out of practice on Wednesday, but you know they have tended to rest veterans on Wednesday, whether or not it's Dwayne Brown. You see the load management designation for DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett on Wednesday now, which I feel like, isn't that an NBA term?
It was. Now it's permeating all of sport. But the best part about load management in the NFL is they just miss the practices that we don't watch. Whereas in the NBA, they actually just take games off.
Right.
There's like, yeah, not showing up to play.
And they call that load management.
Yeah. They call that Kawhi Leonard being a wuss.
That's who started this whole phenomenon, huh?
Yes.
Kawhi Leonard?
Yes. Popovich and Kawhi Leonard.
Yeah.
It wasn't Kawhi Leonard so much. I would say it was more back in the Ginobili, Parker, Duncan days.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Pop would do this all the time.
Well, yeah, missing a Wednesday practice, you know, it's weird because, you know, sometimes they'll say resting vet, and then, and that's initially what they were doing with Metcalf and Lockett, and now they're saying load management. So I think it's the same thing. It's just a fancy term.
Oh, totally. And I don't know. I mean, maybe they have to take a number two, and they just takes them all day, and so they're out because they're managing a load. I don't know.
All right, moving on.
Hey, man, had to throw in one poop joke for the show.
You did get that in there.
Yeah.
I have a question for you, Adam.
Okay.
With the slogan and those who recite the slogan, do you think this
and
is...
have it printed on t-shirts and bumper stickers and have it tattooed on their forehead and... Yeah.
Do you think this is what they intended, or do you think they wanted more? Because coming into the season, you and I predicted that Russell Wilson would have more attempts per game, that they would throw the ball a little bit more. Mm-hmm. And that's what it's worked out to. It's not this drastic 40 attempts per game for Russell Wilson. It's really gone back to more of what we've seen in the 2016-2017 seasons of the Seahawks, when they really just didn't have that much of a running game anyway. And so Russell Wilson was throwing the ball more. Mm-hmm. But you know, really 2018 was that total aberration where they started out throwing the first two games against the Bears and the Denver Broncos, and the offensive line wasn't good enough. So Russell Wilson was getting beat up. They dialed it all the way back. Russell Wilson finished that 2018 season with just over 26 attempts per game on average, which was a lot closer to his 2012-2013 average than anything else in his career. He got up, he was averaging 32 attempts last year. Now he's back up to 34 attempts per game.
Right. So it was a little less, I think, the idea of the slogan being, hey, he's got to throw it a bunch more. I think the idea more for those folks, if I understand them correctly.
Yeah.
It's more about situations.
First and second down, not running in second and long.
Correct.
Yeah.
So yeah, instead of run, run, pass, they just wanted to see that mixed up a little bit more, get a little more aggressive early in games, start calling shots a little earlier in games. So it's more about an aggressiveness in the passing game in terms of situational football instead of just sheer volume.
I just want to get one thing straight with what you're saying. If we were advocating for Russ to throw a little bit more per game on first and second down, And what I heard you say is that proponents of the slogan, that's what they were suggesting. Does that mean we're both on the same page this offseason?
You know, it's funny. A lot of people, they seem to think there's these huge differences in things that maybe like people are just saying the same thing, just slightly differently. Uh-huh. And yeah, I think we all wanted them to throw it a little bit more on first down and, you know, but still run the ball.
Yeah, I still think that the Seahawks are a better team when Chris Carson is getting a good amount of carries in a game.
Hell yeah. And it keeps the ball in our hands. You know, the whole time of possession thing.
What's that? I go back to the Vikings game. Was there such thing as time of possession? Is that important?
Yeah. Well, apparently not as much as we think because they still won. But the thing about time of possession is when we have the ball, that means it's more Russell Wilson that I get to watch. I just feel slighted when they're not on the field all that often.
Yes. Mm-hmm. More Russell Wilson on the field is a better thing for everybody.
Well, if you are for the slogan, I mean, you know, let Russ cook. I mean, this just gives you more of a bigger meal, right? If you have the ball longer.
Probably.
Yeah. Because he's cooking longer.
There's more cooking involved.
Yeah. Bigger dishes.
Well, I thought it was important to clear that up just because of how the statistics are playing out. And they are 5-0. I went back and counted the number of 5-0 stretches they've had just over the course of history with Russell Wilson and the Seahawks. They were able to do it in his rookie season in 2012. You know, that great stretch of Seahawks football where they were beating teams. Arizona Cardinals fans will remember the 58-0 game that was in Seattle. Yeah. That was one of the highlights from that 2012 stretch.
Yeah, that was a fun stretch where they just beat the brakes off of everybody.
Yeah, Buffalo, they went in and dominated up in Toronto. Russell Wilson, during that time, you know, it was 23 attempts per game over that 5-game stretch.
Well, they were doing a lot of read option that year. I mean, that was kind of that year. I mean, if you remember RG3 at that time, mm-hmm. and, you know, guys like that, where all of a sudden this, you know, read option stuff was out there. And these NFL coaches were like, wait a second, why are they running college things? And they like couldn't figure it out for about 4 weeks. And Russ just torched them with it.
Then in 2013, week 6 to week 10, the Seahawks ran off 5 victories after losing the one game to the Indianapolis Colts in week 5. Russell Wilson averaging 26 attempts per game. 2014, they had the run at the end of the season where they won 5 in a row, 28 attempts per game for Russell. And then in 2015... up to 30 attempts. So it's you see it climbing as Russell Wilson takes over this team more from 2012 to 2015. And then they had the stretch 2016, 2017, where they never won 5 games in a row. 2018, they didn't win 5 in a row that year either. But 2019, 31, 32 attempts per game. They're just doing it a little bit differently than they were earlier. And it's because of Russell. And I just thought it was interesting that now they've had 6 seasons out of Russell's, 9, where they've been able to run off these 5-0 stretches.
That is interesting. Well, and they do get hot in stretches, right? We've obviously never seen them be this hot out of the gate. I mean, being that it's 5-0 for the first time ever for the Seattle Seahawks, but it's one of those things where you don't really see a stretch in that schedule when you're looking ahead, where you're like, oh, they could go on a 3-game skid here. Like, it just doesn't feel that way when you start looking over the rest of the schedule going down the future here. I mean, I don't know that this is going to be the only 5-6-7 game winning streak that you're going to see this year.
Yeah. Especially when you look toward that tail end of the schedule, where I think this is getting into the most difficult stretch because 3 of the next 4 games are on the road, 4 of the next 5 games are against division opponents. And like I said, I don't even know how to gauge the strength of the Seahawks wins. I do think that they're stronger victories because they beat the Dolphins and they beat a Cowboys team, I guess, more toward full strength than the Cardinals were able to beat them last week when they were facing off with Andy Dalton. Yeah,
they had their freaking quarterback.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And New England, I don't know if you can... I don't even know if you can say that that's a strong victory at this point either. So this is going to tell us a lot about the Seahawks team and how they're able to win over the next 4 or 5 weeks.
Yeah. And then you start looking at some of the other teams around the league that are on the upcoming schedule here. Now, you we both kind of have stated that we're not big believers in the Cards or the Niners, right? And that's your next two games. But then the Bills after that, right? And the Bills were that other sexy hot team that everybody was talking about, and Josh Allen having his big big start. And then you see the Chiefs put the wood to them this last week. I did watch a tiny bit of that game.
And the Titans before that. I mean, the Titans smushed them.
The Titans are looking pretty good.
I think they're legit.
I may have to eat all the crow that I talk, you know, with all the catfish that I talked about Ryan Tannehill and then giving him money. But
yeah, you might have to.
It turns out when you bludgeon people with Derrick Henry for four quarters, it makes it real easy for Ryan Tannehill to go out there and just hit 10 throws.
Yeah. And, you know, he may be a little bit better than we thought, too. You see guys leaving Miami and all of a sudden that they turns out they might be good.
Leaving Adam Gase to be more. Yeah. To be more specific. But yeah, I think I'm going to just start calling Vrabel Pete Jr.
Oh, OK.
Because this looks like old school Seahawks football, man.
The Titans going to be a team to watch. And there's now three undefeated teams left. The Titans, one of them, the Steelers, the other. Those two teams play this weekend. That'll be a fun game to watch. And then the Seahawks are undefeated.
Yeah, I need to watch that Steelers team because I've heard a lot of I haven't watched any Steelers football this year. Why would you? Because it's the Steelers and, you know, we all hate them for the proper reasons. But, you know, I've heard a lot of different people that I trust say wildly different things about the Pittsburgh defense and what that team really is. There's some folks that just are not a believer at all. Other people that think that they are super legit. I know the Titans are legit. Okay. Mm-hmm. So I'm very curious as to how the Steelers perform in that game. Yeah. That's going to tell you a lot.
Yeah. That's going to be a fun game to watch. It's going to be in Tennessee. The Steelers go on the road to Tennessee, on the road to the Ravens the next week. And then they get to finish that off with a road game against the Cowboys. But next two games are going to tell us quite a bit about the Steelers team.
Oh, for sure. And again, I don't know that home and away really makes a big difference this year.
No, not right now.
No, not for the rest of the year, Brandon. You think there's going to be 30,000 people in a stadium by the time the Super Bowl comes around?
I bet they can 60,000 pack them in. People. I bet they can pack 30 or they may just pack the entire stadium when it comes to the Super Bowl just because it's in Florida.
Just it went in Florida.
Yeah.
You know, behave like a Floridian.
Sure.
Yeah. Do some meth and some crazy catfish. Make poor decisions. Wrestle a gator.
Yeah. We can, let's make a list over the break, Adam, of all the things that we would do if we're in Florida. We'll come back after the break and we'll welcome some new members of the flock and we'll get into some do better and better at life.
All right, man.
Getting into the second half of the show. You know, as we were talking about all the fun things that we wanted to do down in Florida while we were chatting over the break, Adam, the Seahawks came out and said that no fans for November 1 against the 49ers.
Neat or not neat. I don't know. Don't care.
I think it's important. You know me. I tend to be superstitious. I may be even a professional superstitionist.
Yeah.
Would it be like a statistician, a superstition? Am I a professional superstition?
Well, I mean, you perform professional superstition-y things. I think it's on your LinkedIn profile, isn't it?
It should be if it's not. I'm going to update it if it's not there.
Okay.
The Seahawks are undefeated at home. And as they continue to be undefeated at home, then no fans until the Seahawks lose at home.
Right. Yeah. So anybody that, say, has been doing one thing as a ritual throughout this season where the Seahawks have gone undefeated, Keith Kettover. If you have, like, say, a blue Russell Wilson jersey.
Oh, that was Eric. That was Eric.
Oh, that was Eric?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought that was Keith for a second. Oh, all right. Well, never mind. Eric, this is you, buddy. If you've been wearing the blue jersey and we've been undefeated, what are you doing?
Yeah.
You don't change jerseys.
No. You stick with what works.
I understand it was a gift. He posted in the Ring of Honor that he had gotten a very, very kind gift of a much uglier
action
green.
Yeah, it's his first wedding anniversary, right? So
yeah.
Congratulations in order for Eric.
Yeah, absolutely. Unfortunately, he ended up with that the tacky green jersey. And he thought about wearing that on game day, but he'd been wearing the blue one this whole time. So like, what are you doing? It'd be like me not wearing the same hoodie for the game every week. No.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I will say that, you know, when I did the, when I got picked to be on that Sunday night football thing for the Vikings.
Did they
game,
even show you?
They showed me pregame. I think I may have been caught on the TV on the screen because there was a screen up at the game to where you could see me. But yeah, okay. it was not a whole lot of TV time for me. But
no.
That was not what I was going toward on this. Yeah. I started the game with the Karen jersey.
Yeah.
That did not work. And in halftime, I switched over to my Action Green Tyler Lockett jersey. And then they had the 21-point swing and ended up winning the game. So see, the Action Green, it has its purposes.
Well, I don't know that it's so much Action Green, and just that it was the one that's your winning one. That just happens to be your winning one.
Yes.
Now, see, Eric's is blue. And see, for me, that my hoodie's blue. And see, I had started the game in one of my other Seahawks hoodies, but I had taken in the truck with me to the top of the mountain to watch the game. This hoodie, the one that we'd been 4-0 in that point. And after the first quarter, when it wasn't going well, I switched that up.
See, this is important stuff. I feel like fans need to know how to be a fan properly. And
yeah,
and
do your part.
These are good tips.
These are pro tips from a professional superstition.
Yes. If Ryan Fitzpatrick fans were wearing their gear appropriately, like maybe you trimmed your beard in the last couple of weeks, maybe too many Dolphins fans trimmed their beard just in the last week or so. Now Ryan Fitzpatrick benched and Tua now taking over for the Dolphins.
After he's put in a couple really good games in a row.
I know.
I don't understand that at all.
They want Tua to be, they want him doing Tua things all the way up to the playoffs, maybe.
Great. So the guy that basically had a busted up hip that everybody was worried about gets drafted too high, goes to the Dolphins.
Yeah.
And so the first time they're going to like throw him out there as a rookie to start, they're going to do it against Aaron Donald.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, perfect. Yeah. What a smart idea.
You know, I think maybe this is what's bothering you then. It's the fact that you think that Ryan Fitzpatrick has the potential to get a win over the Rams more so than Tua.
Yes, absolutely. Without question. And not only that, but like, if you're a Dolphins fan, why do you want your dude with the hip going against Aaron Donald? It's like, I would be holding my breath the same way the nation did collectively when Alex Smith entered the game, but that wasn't the plan. Like, they weren't going to try to roll him out there. Uh-huh. Alex Smith.
Right. No, he was not the starter that week.
Right. The Dolphins are doing this like a week ahead of time.
Yeah. You know, if it
two weeks ahead of time, there's a bye.
It is a bye. And so that part makes sense. And then if you look at the schedule after the Rams, it's the Cardinals, Chargers, Broncos, Jets, Bengals. So I feel like that's a good stretch to maybe break in a new quarterback.
Sure.
But against Aaron Donald. Yeah, that's
I don't know why. It doesn't make any sense to me. Especially, it's not like Fitzpatrick has been playing poorly. That's the thing, is he's actually been playing pretty well.
No, they crushed the Niners 43-17. They shut out the Jets 24-0. Yeah, and played pretty decently against the Seahawks.
How bummed out would you be if you're Ryan Fitzpatrick right now? I mean, you knew it was the deal, right?
Yeah.
But
I watched an interview with him, and he kind of sounded bummed about the whole deal because he talked about just how crazy of a business it is when after you essentially get fired for your job, then you're on Zoom meetings with the guy who fired you. And then you're stuck in a room with a guy who is replacing you.
Right.
And I think he'll do well with it. I just don't think he likes it. And I don't blame him.
If you're the Cowboys, don't you trade for the beard right now?
I don't know if you're the Dolphins, if you make that trade though.
Why? You're not going to put Fitzpatrick back in.
I think
once you go to it, like, you can't take him out. Like, he's just got to roll with it for the rest of the year.
Sure. But I think having that veteran presence of Fitzpatrick in the locker room was probably good for Tua.
But is it good for Fitzpatrick? He could be playing somewhere.
He could be out there making a difference with the Cowboys team that's going. Well, I guess with the Cowboys, you know, he could. I don't know if I like him behind that Cowboys offensive line, but He would, I guess, have the potential to win that division.
Look, he's definitely...
He's that much of an upgrade over Dalton that it would be worth the Cowboys making the trade?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
I thought Dalton would be better. He is not.
It was one game.
Yeah. Well, we'll see.
I mean, he did have all week to prepare, and then he looked like he didn't. But it was Zeke that was just putting the ball on the ground all game, too.
True. True. He's got to hold on to the rock. No doubt about it.
What do you say we welcome some new members of the flock?
You know, that would raise my spirits today. I could use that. I need some new flockers.
Yeah. Well, we have one new flocker, and that's Keone, who came in at $5 a month. He pledged for the entire year, so welcome to the flock to Keone.
Dude, and I, you know what I like about that the best is that Keone, they're definitely committed.
Right.
You know, to like a year. It wasn't just like a dabble. Yeah. All in. Boom.
Yeah, I like the annual pledges, and we did have a couple people upgrade their pledges. You know, we talked about it being Flocktober, and we talked about it being, you know, a nice goal to shoot for a 10% increase in new members of the flock. But I guess what I got from last week is that maybe that's not what Flocktober is about. Mm. Maybe it's about people who have been members of the flock and stepped away for a minute, decide to come back, or maybe to where you check and see, okay, is what I'm doing to support the show, is that the level I want to support at, or do I want to bump it up a little bit? Because we got Jeremy Miner coming back in at $12.12 a month.
Hey, welcome back, man.
Welcome back to Jeremy.
It's been a minute, yeah.
And Chris came in at $5 a month for the whole year, and Chris has been on board before, but now putting down for the entire year.
See, I like it. I like it. So, you know, the best part about Flocktober to me and what it means to me, it's a season of giving to us, me and you.
Right.
Where we get people to give things to us, like money.
Uh-huh.
And I think the spirit of Flocktober is amazing for that. It's my favorite month.
Others who are in the giving spirit of Flocktober, Norma Holter comes in, ups her pledge from 3 to 12. So a nice raise from Norma.
Oh, yeah. Appreciate that.
Chris Woolston up from $1 a month to $12.12. So welcome to the Ring of Honor group, Chris.
Okay, Norma and Chris, they're going big.
Yeah.
Like they got just up in just a little bit, like going whole enchilada, Ring of Honor style.
And also in the Ring of Honor, Aaron Fisher in at $12.12 up from $5 a month. So welcome, Aaron.
Awesome. Welcome, Aaron. Hey, and I got my gift game working a little better.
Did you?
One of the...
Oh, you know, I did see the Clint Eastwood hat tip.
I got one. I did it. I did the gif.
Everybody was very proud.
No more so than myself. I can tell you that. I was so proud. A button popped right off my chest, like right off my shirt.
And Adam upped his pledge from $1 to the $5 club in our Patreon group. So thank you to Adam.
Yeah. That's clearly a badass.
He's got a badass name.
Yeah.
He knows how to support the show in badass ways.
Right. And, you know, he likes his badass quarterback and the badass Seahawks. So, I mean, what's not to love about a guy named Adam?
And making you feel better on a day to where I made you drive from the cabin on icy, ruddy roads back to your normal podcast studio so we could get a show in this week.
Right. Right. But this may be the final podcast from this room.
We'll got to let that hang just a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I wanted to scare everybody just for a second. The internets, they're coming. They're supposedly coming tomorrow.
Don't jinx it.
Hey, it's on the schedule, man. I got confirmation, the whole thing. And I said supposedly.
That's enough of a qualifier.
Absolutely.
Well, that could be very exciting, especially for you and not having to. You'll be able to watch football from your mountain home now.
My hope is to watch the Seahawks this weekend from my actual living room in my cabin in the woods.
Ooh, it's very exciting.
Gulch football. I'm hoping for Gulch football this weekend.
Gulch football? Does that mean we might do a Gulch post-game show?
I don't know.
Maybe just as a little test. A little test.
A little tester risky?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the good news is that the lady friend is going to be at work all day, so she wouldn't have to listen to it.
That's a bonus for her.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, it's better for our relationship.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, well, we won't set anything in stone.
Okay. Well, yeah, that's how I do.
Right.
So I appreciate that.
Okay.
Yeah.
We also appreciate our executive producers, Dustin Mock and Brian Shaw. Thanks again to them.
A million thank yous. There's never enough thank yous. And the thing is, the reason why we mention them so often is that they, out of everybody, they flocked over the hardest.
Yeah.
You know, in that spirit of giving to us. And that's what I like. I appreciate them for that.
They are just flocking the Tober like crazy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Whatever that means.
Well, I'll let you decide. If somebody told you they were flocking the Tober, what would be your the first mental image that comes up?
That, you know, that may be a good question to put out to everybody, because I don't know.
All right. What does it mean to you when you are flocking the Tober?
Maybe it means you're going to tinypiecesofseahawksstuff.com and putting in a Go Hawks there to enter to win this month's Tiny Piece of Seahawks Stuff, which is Russell Wilson and Doug Baldwin with a little piece of wolf gray jersey and white jersey.
Heck yeah, man. You have that in your house. If you win that, you'd be flocking the Tober.
Every time.
I mean, maybe, per se. Hey, that's just one of the ways.
That's just how you view it.
Well, maybe. I don't know. Just a thought.
Well, the Jordan Brookings Institution in our Pick'em League is flocking the Tober. He was the week 6 winner of the Pick'em League.
That's impressive. I think I had my worst week.
Oh, yeah? Because you didn't put in your picks?
No, I did put in my picks.
Oh.
I just might as well not have. I think I only got like 5 or 6 right.
Yeah, Disley Adams, 6 picks is what you got.
Yeah.
And I got 8 picks. And so now I am...
tied, yeah.
How does that work? It says, we are tied. We both have 53 picks correct now.
There we go.
It's after the bye week, and you and I may as well be starting 0-0 in the pick 'em.
That's right. Now it's on for the second quarter of the season.
You remembered to put in your Thursday pick?
I'm literally doing it right now because Leo was kind enough to remind me in the Ring of Honor.
Now I feel like I'm the one reminding you, though.
No, I it's, well, okay, fine. You both get credit. How about that? it's the multiple reminders that made it so that it happened for me. And I'm appreciative of that.
Who are you picking for the craptastic Thursday night game?
I haven't looked yet. What is the craptastic? Oh, wow.
Philadelphia at home against the New York Giants.
I'm going to go with Philly.
Okay.
But I don't love it.
I picked Philly too, so we'll still be tied after tonight.
Yeah.
So congrats to Jordan Brookings Institution, week 6 winner. I have got some more prizes on order, and I'm going to be opening up the prize selection here probably pretty soon to our first few weeks of winners.
You always do good with that.
Thanks. Our former Pick'em League champ, Gary Blum, responding to last week's show, said some key takeaways for the flock from last week's podcast. 1, I sell life insurance for a living. 2, everyone, not just Seahawks fans, should own some. 3, fandom is not a question on the application, nor is it considered a pre-existing condition.
That's good to know.
Says it makes for great defense. Maybe Ken Norton should look into it.
There we are. Look, I didn't know that Gary would be the answer man on this, but yeah. I appreciate him chiming in.
I think we need a sponsored life insurance. Like Gary could be our life insurance sponsor now for the show.
Yeah. Yeah.
Considering these close wins.
Right. And also, if you guys need life insurance, you know, just hit up Gary in the Ring of Honor. He'll get you hooked up.
Right.
Yeah.
Hey, speaking of people to hit up in the Ring of Honor, I posted a link there. My sister-in-law does the Scentsy stuff, you know, those little wax warmers, and they're coming out with NFL and Seahawks warmers. So I will put a link in the show notes if anybody wants to pre-order one, because once they go on sale, they sell out fast. So you're going to want to pre-order it. And I'll put a link in the show notes for everybody to, if you want a Seahawks Scentsy Wax Warmer, they're $45 and you can put in your pre-order.
A wax warmer?
You know, have you ever gone to somebody's house and it smells pretty and they have the little dish that has the little bit of wax in it?
Yeah, isn't that called a catfish candle?
It's like...
I mean, why do you need to spend $45 on an electronic device for that? Like, can't you just like light a candle?
You could light a candle. You could, but
doesn't that warm the wax? That's the whole point of candling.
I think candling makes for more fire hazards, and so this is a safer way to go, and it lasts longer. The scent, I believe, lasts longer. I don't know.
Well, you're not a melty wax expert.
I know that candles melt wax. I know that these Scentsy warmers melt wax. They're practically the same thing. So choose what you want.
I don't know. Are there any, Brandon?
Let me ask you this. Have you ever seen a Seahawks themed candle?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's one other option then.
Okay. Well, no, what I really want to know is what feels more dangerous to you, electricity or fire?
They both have the potential to be dangerous.
Yeah. But which one is scarier?
Fire?
No.
Yeah.
It's electricity.
No, I can.
Electricity's freaking magic.
I can turn off the switch and the electricity goes away.
Yeah. Well, you know, electricity will jump out and grab you. Like it literally will. Like that happens.
Uh-huh.
You know, big panels and all that stuff. Yeah. Electricity's terrifying compared to fire. Fire. I understand fire. I get fire.
This may be a personal choice.
I'm just saying. Like I get that electricity. It's magic.
I've never seen anybody have to go to the hospital to get skin grafts for electrical burns.
Really?
No. I think you just die.
That sounds worse. You don't even get the skin grafts. You're dead now. These are the important things that we need to think about.
This is why I don't make any decisions for anybody. Pick the one that works for you and do that.
I like that your answer to the problem here, your solution, is more freedom. You do you.
You do you.
It's very Montana of you.
It works in most situations. I'd say, you know, a good 85% of the time.
Yeah, I think the like first line of the Constitution of Montana is like, just don't be a dick.
Yeah, the Will Wheaton approach to constitutioning.
There we go. There we go. I did not realize that was a phrase that Will Wheaton promoted.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. I think it's, in fact, is it called the Will Wheaton rule?
Really? Hey, we're talking about like Wesley Crusher from
Wheaton's law. That's Wheaton's law is don't be a dick.
Oh, how did he get that to be his law?
He called it.
He must have been cool about it, I guess.
Yeah. Wheatonslaw.com.
Hey, keep getting them checks, Will Wheaton. I haven't seen you in anything for a long time, so I'm sure you could use them.
He was in Big Bang Theory for a long time.
Yeah, that's a show that I could not watch.
That's your problem.
No. It was for my benefit.
Speaking of benefits, it is to our benefit that we should get the answer from Jeremy on the trivia question he called in with last week.
All right. Yeah, I'm ready.
Hey, Brandon and Adam. This is Jeremy from California, and I'm just calling with my answer to last week's trivia question. I know it was kind of easy. The question was, what is the only team in the NFL that Russ has never beaten? And the answer is the Chargers. He's 0-2 against them. But my question this week is perhaps a little bit more challenging. And that is this. There are only three teams in the NFL Russ has never beaten in Seattle. What are those three teams? And as a hint, two of those teams are from almost the same place. Gox.
So two teams are almost from the same place, and there's three teams that Russ hasn't beaten in CenturyLink.
So if they're almost from the same place, that can't be... either New York team or either LA team, right? Because it's the exact same place.
Maybe it's Buffalo and the Jets or Giants. Then
I'm thinking two of the teams are the Ravens and Washington football team.
That's what you think two of the teams are?
Yeah, because those are almost the same place.
Oh, sure. Yeah, I guess Philly would be in that almost the same area, too.
I think you're almost the same area is a lot farther.
Philly and Baltimore are pretty close.
Yeah, okay. What's closer, Philly and Baltimore or Baltimore and D.C.?
Oh, Baltimore and D.C.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So, yeah.
I don't even have to look that up. I can tell you.
Well, I've never been there, smarty pants. Okay.
It's within a couple hour drive. So from going to Baltimore to Philly, too. So
everything out east is within a couple hour drive.
Sure. That's why Jeremy's trying to mess with us here.
No, I'm telling you, the Ravens and the Washington football team are two of them. And so you get to figure out the third.
We've always beaten the Packers. We were at the game. They beat the Lions. Definitely have never lost to the Vikings. The Bears in Seattle.
During the Russell Wilson era? Have the Bears even been to the clink?
They must have.
Since Russ? I mean, it feels like it, right? It just always feels like we're at Soldier Field.
Right? That's probably one game. Well, I can tell you we're probably not going to get this with nailing the three teams.
Well, I nailed two, and two out of three ain't bad. Yeah. So, yeah.
I'll go with the Bears as that third team.
All right. Well, you
we'll submit our answer together.
Yeah, you saved us last week.
That's true.
For Jeremy's quote unquote easy question.
Yeah, these going to get harder, Jeremy. Geez.
Yeah. He's always what. Yeah. Is this going to be chatfish? And I don't know for 1,000. Is that what next?
Well, thanks to Jeremy carving out a little niche here before we get to the mailbag. If you want to be part of our Seahawkers podcast mailbag, gohawks@seahawkerspodcast.com. Noah checks in, says it's Noah, the Noah that helped out with the podcast cover art. Just wanted to say hey, and that I'm still an avid listener. Actually started my own NFL podcast, and I have podcasts like yours to thank for it. The Seahawkers podcast, Field Goals, and shows like those made me realize how fun podcasting can be. Our show is called Tutter Nation Pro Football Podcast. I'm still learning how to be an effective host/producer, but I'm enjoying every second of it. I'd love to have you on in the future, too, or vice versa, if that would work out. My co-hosts are two Rams fans, so I'm definitely outnumbered. But anyway, wanted to share with you guys, here's a link to our latest episode. And I'll put a link to Noah's show and in our show notes. Noah helping us out with the cover art. That's awesome.
Yeah. So. Yeah. I'm very intrigued. That will probably be what I listen to on my icy drive back to the cabin.
Hey, there you go.
Yeah.
Two Rams fans, though. I feel like that's not selling.
This is opposition research. And so when I go on the show, I can extra eviscerate the Rams fans.
Nice.
Yeah. Because I'll know some of the, dumb things that they've said already.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That must be exhausting for Noah to call that stuff out every single week.
Look, man, some of us are out here doing God's work and Noah's one of them, you know?
On to do better and better at life.
All right.
My do better this week is for Mark Ryan. And Adam, there are some bad takes on Twitter, but you have to be really bad if you host a radio show in South Carolina and your bad takes are getting amplified to those of us on the West Coast.
Yeah, that's a long ways away.
Yes.
You have to have really bad takes for it to radiate that far.
South Carolina is not in the area of Washington.
No.
And
not almost the same place.
I think I may have found one of the worst takes in the history of sports takes. Everyone knows, Adam, that your favorite team is the Seahawks. Mm-hmm. What would you say is your second favorite sports team?
Sports or football?
Sports.
I'd say probably the Boston Celtics.
This sports take means that you have to turn in your sports fan card. Yes. According to the gatekeeper of sports fandom, if you're a true fan, you accept all of the city's teams. So if you're going to be a fan of one team in that city, you have to be a fan of all the teams within that city. So you just can't be a Celtics fan, because then if you're a fan of the Celtics, you have to be a New England Patriots fan.
Yeah, but they're not even in Boston. They're in Foxborough.
Yeah, that's Boston area.
Okay. Yeah, I've seen people make this case.
He says cherry picking one team from a city is weak. In this blog post, he says one of the weirdest things I've ever seen is when fans adopt one team from a city, but not all. Where I come from, you don't do that. I've spent 15 or more years of my life in Houston, Texas. I like the Astros, Rockets, and Texans. I also have spent 15 or more years of my life in Tampa Bay. I like the Bucks, Lightning, and Rays. Do you see a theme here? I like and accept every team from those cities. You can like and support the Panthers, but if you hate the Falcons, you lose the Braves. That's how the rules of sports fandom work. Don't fall for the marketing, folks. No matter what they try to tell you, the New England Patriots are a Boston team. See, he even has it in his blog, Adam.
I guess those places are almost the same.
Yeah, so this guy is saying you can't be a cherry picker of your favorite sports teams. You have to settle on a city, go with that, and you know what? You just can't be a basketball fan, I guess, if you're a Seattle sports fan. So for the guy that lives in a state that doesn't even have a professional sports franchise, and he's calling himself the gatekeeper of sports fandom, Mark Ryan, do better.
Yeah, there's some holes in this because number one, what if you're not from one of the areas with a professional sports team? Like you just mentioned here in Montana, we don't have that. So that makes us a bit of a nomad.
You have to pick a city and go with it.
Right. But then also too, this idea that if I hate the Falcons, then I have to hate the Atlanta Braves as well.
Right.
Like, why? I don't have to do that.
These are questions that aren't for me. These are questions for the gatekeeper of sports fandom.
And here's the other thing. As a diehard Seattle Seahawks fan, I do find myself like I'm getting in on the ground level with the Kraken.
Uh-huh.
Like I'm very excited about that. I think this is when I'm going to learn hockey and appreciate it. You know, I just have never been into it. I think it's a sport for me though. So I'm excited about the Kraken. And like you mentioned, Sonics are gone. And I love myself too much to be a Mariners fan. I don't need that aggravation in my life.
It's tough being a Mariners fan.
Yeah. Yeah. So
because I have firmly put myself now in fair weather Mariners fan category.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Because when they come back and they're good again, then I'll get back into it.
There you go. Oh, absolutely. I mean, that's basically where I follow with it too. Like if I'm going to follow a baseball team at all, it would be the Mariners, I guess. But
I wouldn't bandwagon to another team just to enjoy baseball.
Yeah. I just have a hard time finding a way to enjoy baseball. I'd rather watch golf on TV.
Oh, well, yeah. I wouldn't say it like that, though. I would rather watch golf.
Yeah. I mean, literally just about anything. I'd watch curling before that. I'd watch figure skating.
I just like golf on TV, but.
Baseball's so freaking boring.
All right. Well, don't alienate all of our Mariners fans.
Well, they don't have to dislike baseball too. I'm just saying I don't like it. And if you do, there's probably something wrong with you, but you know, good luck with that. Or you're 85 and you live in Tampa.
Okay. I'm about to change my do better.
All right, man. Well, before you do that, I'm going to sneak mine in here. My do better this week is for the company Ring. You know, the one that makes the doorbell
with
the little camera thingy in it. Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Which is already a little creepy, you know.
Wait, you like don't have one of those up at the cabin?
No. I do have a trail camera hidden up there though that I check periodically. So if you did happen to, you know, walk by like a Sam Squanch or something like that, like I know you had been there.
Okay.
But I don't get like
wildlife updates. Camera, yeah.
Yeah. Well, this company has come up with literally the worst idea I could ever think of when it comes to all these home electronics that we're seeing, you know, like the series and the Googles and all the things in your house now that are always listening and recording everything and, you know, reporting it back to the government and all that, you know, selling you out.
I don't know about that last part, but yeah.
No, that's what they're doing. You know, they are. So this is their latest cool invention. Ring latest home security camera is taking flight. Literally. The new Always Home Cam is an autonomous drone that can fly around inside your home to give you perspective from any room you want when you're not at home. Oh, yeah, it's just going to fly around only when you're not at home. And you've got a creepy flying drone buzzing around your house, spying on catfish. This is totally the takeover of the machines. That is one of the most terrible ideas I've ever heard in my life. A flying spy in your own catfish house. So to Ring Home Security Company, do better.
Okay, can I tell you how American I am about this idea? I think it would be amazing if you put something that can fire bullets on that. And mm-hmm. then that way, if you have an home intruder,
yeah.
then your home drone can take out the home intruder.
Yeah.
But then yeah. I think about Terminator 2, and I think that's probably a terrible idea.
Yeah, no.
Because it might start to consider you the home intruder.
You don't know. You don't know. It could have a bad day identifying things, right?
Uh-huh.
And, yeah. Or maybe you just didn't shave for a couple weeks or whatever it is. Like this thing. So for the low, low price of $249.99, you too could have a flying spy in your house and maybe arm it like Brandon suggested. What could go wrong?
How much for the weapon armament attachment?
I think that's going to be a custom job.
Oh,
okay. So like you probably have to figure that out on your own. And it's pretty small. So I'm guessing you'd probably have to go with like a single shot 22 or something. Be like a one shot, one kill thing.
Hmm. With a 22?
Yeah. Don't underestimate the 22.
Okay. Well, I guess with the robot aim, it probably does okay with that.
Robot aim?
The robot's not going to miss.
You don't need robot aim to hit things with a 22.
I'm just saying
Yeah.
If you are trying to protect yourself and your home, you might mm-hmm. take a shot that misses the first time.
Yeah.
Whereas the robot isn't going to, you know, it doesn't have feelings and emotions yet.
Right. Yeah, no, that's true.
So it
that's
may not true. Miss the first time like a person.
It's just recording yours everywhere you go. Like an annoying spying mosquito.
On to better at life.
Thank God, because I don't understand.
My better at life this week is for Adam Rank. That's right. The Adam Rank, who just a week ago said the Rams are the best team in the NFC West. And I probably would have put it in my do better last week, because as he was power ranking his teams, you saw the article that went out that said, sorry, undefeated Seahawks and Packers, the Rams are the NFC's best team. And in his article, he said, that's right. In this moment, 5 weeks into an unprecedented pandemic-shaped season, the NFC's best outfit is the 4-1 Los Angeles Rams. And even in there, he said, if you want to respond with LOL, they're the best team in the NFC East, that is fair. After all, each of the Rams' 4 wins have come against the downtrodden division. And the fun thing was, is I went back and looked at Adam Rank's preseason prediction, where he predicted all of the Rams' games. He had the Rams starting out at 4-1 in his preseason prediction. So things were going perfectly according to Adam Rank's plans from the preseason, then through 5 weeks of the regular season. The problem is that they even confused himself as to, you know, tricking him into thinking that they had a good team. He had the Rams finishing the season going 7-9. And so I think what happened here is that he actually jinxed it like a true jinx. He had himself thinking that they were good. He called them out as good. And then now it's going the correct way as he predicted within the preseason. So for Adam Rank, jinxing the Rams to get back on track to his original 7-9 prediction, better at life than Skip Bayless.
Yeah, that's a sneaky jinx.
I know.
The unintentional jinx is maybe the hardest to pull off because of the unintentionality of it.
And what's creepy is I'm watching my email come in, Adam.
Yeah.
I just got an email about the Ring video doorbell being on sale.
Really?
Yeah.
Do you have a flying Ringy drone in your house right now that fed that information back to the, you know,
I mean, it could have been, it could have been my Amazon device.
It probably was. It's probably she who shall not be named.
Oh, yeah.
That sold you out.
I think they're in cahoots together. Like for real.
Yeah.
Ring and Amazon.
They are in cahoots together. Yeah.
Ooh, creepy.
See how World War III starting?
What I said about arming my Ring drone, not going to do it. I'm not out doing on that it now.
Yeah, maybe give it like Nerf guns.
Would that be fun?
Yeah.
For the kids.
Yeah. You need an excuse to shoot your kids as often as possible. That would be a good one.
With Nerf guns.
Right.
Who do you got for better at life?
My better at life than Skip Bayless this week is for none other than Bruce Irvin. He took to Twitter the other day, seemingly out of the blue, just to throw out a little tweet just to get everybody's attention. And it went something along the lines of, "And Clowney still got the same amount of sacks as me on the year. Just saying." And I just thought that was hilarious. Like, pointing out that Clowney's done pretty much nothing for the Titans up through 5 weeks, which is about the time this came out. And, you know, Bruce blows out his knee, tied for sacks.
Still.
So for Bruce, still bringing enjoyment to my fandom while being sidelined with a knee injury. Better at life than Skip Bayless. I appreciate the shots of Clowney.
I did enjoy. He had shots for Clowney. He was shooting all kinds of shots on Twitter the other day. Bruce Irvin is a fun Twitter follow. Mm. You should get back on Twitter and just follow Bruce.
Nope. Okay. Definitely not going back on Twitter.
No, not even for Bruce.
Not for no one, dude.
You see the important tweets. That's the thing. You got the important one from Bruce. It made its way to you.
That's exactly it. Yeah. And, you know, I enjoyed it, but since it happened on Twitter, it still doesn't really matter.
What?
Yeah.
Even if it makes its way off Twitter to you?
Even if it's a tweet from the President of the United States, if he says it on Twitter, it doesn't matter.
I think that's actually been legally determined now.
Has it? Oh.
The courts.
Hey, who said all the courts make bad decisions, huh?
And with that,
there's only one thing left to say.
Go Hawks.
Go Hawks.